friends. Welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you very much for stopping by today, joining us for some internet talk radio. My name is Henrik, and if you are a regular listener to this program and our website, you know what we are about. If not, if you're new to the program, go to our website, redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E, creations.com. There you can find more information about what we do here, our radio program, our members area, and of course, follow along in our news section. And today we have Andy Thomas with us. He is the author of 5 books. One I'd like to mention here right away is called Vital Signs, A Complete Guide to the Crop Circle Mystery. It's the ultimate guide to the crop circles for newcomers and an essential summary for those already entranced into this very, very intriguing and interesting topic of crop circles. He's also currently working on a book called The Truth Agenda, and we'll talk more about that later on here in the program. And he has been focusing a lot on the crop circle phenomena, but he's also looked into many other areas that touch upon the mysteries, if you will, of this world. Andy will also be one of the speakers at the Alternative View 2 in London, upcoming in about a month from now. He'll be giving a presentation called The Era of Turmoil and the Energy of Hope, that, as I understand it, will primarily focus on the election of Barack Obama, and despite that the same old guard, if you will, is behind Obama, it still is kind of a sign of a willingness for change, a spark of positivity, if you will. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the program as well. For you guys who want to come to the Alternative View, check out avii.co.uk or simply thealternativeview.co.uk for much more information on dates, tickets, accommodation, and of course the speakers. And again, we're only about a month away now, and I'm really looking forward to getting over there, seeing some of the presentations, and also hopefully meet some of you guys there as well. Andy has a few websites that we can mention here at the beginning of the program. VitalSciencePublishing.co.uk, but also take a look at SwirledNews.com and ChangingTimes.org.uk. So with that, welcome to the program, Andy. Thank you very much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Brilliant. You know, I want to begin here to talk a little bit about crop circles. It's kind of good timing as well. We're coming into the May month here very soon, and this is usually as far as I can tell, that this is when the crop circle season gets going for real, as it were. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your interest in crop circles. You've written a number of books on the subject. How did you get involved, and what got you hooked on this particular topic, Andy?
Well, I think the crop circles for many people have been things which have opened up a whole seam of questioning about the world around them, because you're dealing with a mystery. And when you have a mystery, you have to dig deeper to try to get down to the bottom of what's going on. And the problem we've had with crop circles has been, obviously, there's been so much skepticism and debunking that people have found themselves put off even looking at the subject. And yet, when you look at the evidence there is to say that there is something more going on than just men rushing around with bits of wood, it's actually quite astonishing how much evidence there is. And where I began with it was very much with just the basic knowledge that they had been around, but I didn't know much about them. And I was down in the West Country in the summer of 1991. And, of course, down in Wiltshire in particular, there are many, many crop circles every year. It's very much the epicenter for this mystery. And I was immediately struck in a very strange way with the fact that these astonishing huge shapes could be appearing, and nobody that I spoke to could tell me where they were coming from or what was making them. And I was immediately passionate to know, and I found myself coming back from that visit absolutely in another place in my head. And so I then discovered, of course, there were many other people researching them, and I became involved. And I live in a county called Sussex, which is sort of about 50 miles south of London on the south coast of England. And I got together with people in Sussex who were also researching crop circles, and then we formed our own organization, Southern Circular Research. So, you know, we very much look after, if you like, the crop circles which appear in East and West Sussex and try to just keep tabs on what's going on. We photograph them, we measure them, and, of course, you know, we network with other people all around the world who are doing, you know, very important work in trying to show that there is something going on here. And as I say, the evidence, when you look at it, is truly extraordinary. And because of that adventure of questioning began by the mystery of crop circles, many people, and including myself very much, have found themselves on a whole journey of the mind, investigating so many other mysteries and cover-ups and things which now are, you know, very much at the forefront of people's minds. So I think that's what's exciting about crop circles, the absence of a definitive answer, because nobody really knows where they come from, enables people to look more deeply within themselves, but also at the same time at the universe around them with new eyes. And I think that is a real gift wherever this mystery is really coming from.
That's right. And what is appealing to you? Is it the mystery of the origins of these circles, or is it like the allure of the, you know, geometrical patterns and almost the sacred geometry to many of these patterns?
Well, I think it's a combination. I mean, obviously, the patterns themselves are so astonishing that really they do act as a honey trap. There's very few people who are not going to in some way be moved by some of the extraordinary designs that we've had over the years. But I think for me, it's more than just that. I think, obviously, the exquisite geometry of some of them is very important. But when you look at some of the other things, like the biological anomalies that they have found over the years inside the plants, which cannot be replicated by man-made formations, and then you look at the other things, like you have eyewitness testimony. People have watched crop circles appearing within seconds before their eyes, and people who've seen strange lights and had experiences which, you know, really cannot be the result of just something mundane. I think this is when you realize that we're dealing with a very multi-layered mystery. It seems that every time you think you're getting some kind of answer to something, all you do is just reveal more mysteries. And I fully appreciate that obviously some crop circles are man-made, because some people, you know, they accuse crop circle researchers of refusing to see that some of them are man-made. Well, I think everybody accepts that. Nonetheless, the reality is there are a large number of formations over the years which just cannot be explained so simply. So I think it's the mystery, it's the many different qualities to them, their beauty, of course, and the symbolism and what people think they may mean. I mean, we've had very clear astronomical diagrams in the fields over the years, some of them showing dates and times, which, when those dates and times have arrived, have coincided with unusual and unpredictable celestial phenomena. So some people even think that what's going on here even has the power of prediction. And many of these crop circles have also alluded to ancient calendars, things like the Maya calendar, and have also had direct connotations to the year 2012, which of course many people believe, based on ancient prophecies, but also modern predictions, that some extraordinary changes might be occurring to our planet. And we're seeing that reflected in the shapes we're seeing in the fields too. So all of that very much speaks of these things being, you know, very much signs of our times, as people have called them. And I think that's a very apt description.
Yes. What would you say, or do you think that there's any kind of clear distinctions between some that seem to be man-made then, and others, you know, that are, you know, by whoever or whatever that makes these other patterns?
Well, I mean, I think you have to look at a number of different levels. I mean, number one is when you see man-made formations being created for television programs, and of course we've seen much of that over the years, you know, it is clear that many of these designs made like that take a lot of effort. But the interesting thing is, certainly in all the known man-made designs that you know, our team has visited over the years, if you get down on your hands and knees and look at the crop, you can usually see where it's creased, it's damaged, it's exhibiting signs of mechanical force being used. And yet we've been into so many designs where that is not visible at all. I mean, young green plants, for instance, when the crop is quite young, now they have a sort of bloom, a silvery dust that grows on the stem. Now, you only have to stroke that even lightly with your finger and you will remove it. And yet we've been in so many formations where there's no sign of scuffing or creasing or any removal of that bloom. And many designs appear on nights of rain when it's wet and it's muddy. And again, if you walk in a wet formation, you basically tread wet mud all over it.
Yeah.
But again, we have entered many new formations in wet conditions, and there's no sign of this. So I think the physical examination of the plant is obviously very important. And as I mentioned before, there have been people who have tested the circle-affected plants. People like William Levinger, but also Elcho Hasselhoff in the Netherlands, who have shown without any doubt that there are changes occurring, which no man-made formation has ever created. So I think it's when you start to look at this evidence and then you put it together with the eyewitness testimony that you can begin to get some sense of whether or not a formation might be more likely to be genuine, as it were, or man-made. But obviously, at the end of the day, we cannot know for sure unless we were there while it was being created. And given that, the interesting thing is, contrary to the view that's often put around that the majority of them are known to be man-made,
yes,
actually it's the other way around. The majority of them are a complete mystery.
Mm.
And we can only show that a very small percentage of them are absolutely known to be man-made. The rest are simply an unknown quantity. And of course, it's that mystery that keeps the intrigue around crop circles going on, and it's already begun this year. We've already had three or four very nice formations in the rapeseed that we have here, you know, the bright yellow plants.
Mm-hmm.
And so once again, it's begun, and already you have people discussing them. And every year, the fields produce these strange puzzles which immediately inspire people. And they, as I say, they tend to have this ability to make people see things from a different perspective and makes them sort of reach for higher aspirations. And I think that if that's all they do, wherever they come from, it is an achievement in its own right.
Well, exactly. Good point. I mean, in one sense, does it matter who makes them, really? What is important is how they affect us and how people are well drawn into their beauty in many cases, right?
Well, yes, I think that's quite right. And it's long been said, well, does it matter? I mean, certainly those who believe the crop circles are messages from some higher force, now they would argue it does matter. And one of the arguments against man-made formations has been, well, what they're doing is, if you like, they're polluting the code. They're not coming from that same source of sort of high inspiration in their view.
Mm.
So therefore, we must distinguish between the man-made ones and, shall we say, the mysterious ones. Otherwise, you know, we could be in danger of being misled. But I think in general, I would say it's got to the point where the fact that it just simply keeps itself going, the strange mystery, in itself, it just creates this level of questioning, this journeying of the mind that I now think is likely to perpetuate itself for quite a long time. And I suspect we are now dealing with a blend of formations from, shall we say, elsewhere, and a blend of man-made formations. Now, obviously, which percentage you choose, whether you want to think that most of them are man-made or most of them are not man-made, I think it's very much an individual decision. And I think it comes down to each individual's assessment of the evidence. But I think getting people to the evidence is the key thing. And one of the things that I've concentrated on in the last few years very much is to deliver that evidence to people.
Yes.
So that they can make up their own minds. So whether it be in the lecture or the books I've written, if you can show people rationally presented evidence of why there is a case to be looked at here, I find that most people in the end will say, yep, I can see that there is more to this than I thought. And then you've passed the gift along, if you like. Then they begin the journey and the, you know, this, the evolution of consciousness, which results then carries on. So I think very much there is an onus on those studying crop circles to make sure they pass the baton on, if you like, to new people who are coming to this mystery, so that they can try and provide some insights and take the journey of the mind themselves. So I think that's very important.
Absolutely. And we've seem to have been going through different types of patterns throughout the years, and it's kind of a difficult question, I know, but do you expect something in particular of the 09 season?
Oh, I think most researchers have realized that making predictions about crop circles is a futile business. I mean, there have been some, accurate predictions made. My suspicion is we'll have another year of, marvelous designs mixed with a few that aren't so marvelous. I don't think we're quite at that stage of grand revelation that I think some people are expecting or hoping for. Those who believe the crop circles are caught up with anticipating the 2012 changes, whatever they may be, I think they are hoping that there will suddenly be this year where there are more formations than ever and, patterns that are even bigger and more exciting. And maybe that will come to pass, but I think not yet. And I get the feeling it will be, what I've called in the past a holding operation. I think they're just doing what they do, and I don't think we're yet ready for a final statement. But who knows? Maybe we get to 2012 and something special will happen, or the opposite happens and they will stop.
Right, exactly.
Of course, this is a possibility that whatever impetus is creating them will actually cease. And we could one day find no crop circles in the fields, and that in itself would be as big a puzzle. But maybe if they're here to herald a time of change, well, of course, now that time of change appears to be almost with us, maybe they won't need to appear anymore. But I think still a few more years of this before it goes on to something else, I suspect.
Mm. So was it this topic then of crop circles that kind of led you on in your path, if you will, and you began to looking into other areas that has taken you more towards this, the Agenda of Truth, as your latest or new upcoming book is called?
Well, that's right. Now, I mean, most people who become involved with, any level of mystery, sooner or later find their eyes being open to other subjects that they took for granted. Because things like the statement, well, all crop circles are man-made. People take these things for granted until they see the evidence. Mm. And then they realize there is evidence that they've not heard about in the mainstream or that they've not been told about. And of course, once you start thinking about one subject like that, soon you begin to apply that line of thinking to many, many other subjects. And so, the world of the unexplained attracts people who have, quite radical alternative views on the everyday reality that we have presented to us by the media. And you soon realize that what has been presented is a facade. It's not as the world really is. That much soon becomes clear. And because of that need that I personally have to get to the bottom of mystery, even if you can't come up with the solutions, but just to peel off the layers of being misled by, this tendency that our society has to pretend that everything is explained when it isn't, that's led me to really look at all the different layers that are going on at the moment, which lead people to believe in things like conspiracy theories. And we do now seem to live very much in times where, what we thought was is not how it is. And I think the banking crisis, the economic crisis, is waking a lot of people up to realizing, well, maybe the world isn't like I thought it was. People think they were safe, they were cozy, their money was being looked after. Now that's become very clear that's not the case. Mm. And that also there is a pretty obvious trail of deception and corruption, which has kept the truth about the way the money world has been running for a long time. And now people are becoming more open to that. They're beginning to want to know more about many other levels, including the levels of the more mysterious. So I think we now live in extremely interesting times because of that.
Maybe you can paint a picture for us a little bit, if you will. And I know that this is something that you'll go into more detail then on the alternative view when you're going to do your speech there or talk there. But what is the some of the problems you see more than beyond, like what we're going through now with the financial system and banking system? And would you say that that is being being done for a particular purpose in order to, well, some people talk about this idea that they want to reform, of course, the economic system in order to bring in, first of all, regionalized currencies, but then after a while, even a one world currency. Where do you see this going, so to speak?
Well, this is one of the areas that I've been writing about. Now, what I'm trying to do with the book, The Truth Agenda, which is sort of in its final stages now, is to try to offer to people who are sort of on the fringes of interest in this kind of other way of looking at things, but who maybe are not quite ready for a huge book the size of a telephone directory with lots of tiny writing. They need something that can, you know, they can relate to, and that isn't too overwhelming. And that's very much what I'm trying to look at the moment in the book, is like, okay, well, what would all this conspiracy that many people believe in, what would it be there for? What would be the general view of this? Why is it needed? And after a while, I think you can begin to put together, I think, a fairly sort of good possibility of a scenario, because it's very clear that those in power have far more interest in, shall we say, levels of occult knowledge than they might let on. And I think that a lot of the ancient prophecies and the predictions are things that there are certain people who pull the strings of the world, the powers behind the powers, if you like, yes, I think are very aware of the possibility that we might be entering a huge time of change. And what seems to be the view increasingly is becoming likely is that these powers want to make sure that if there is an event that in any way threatens to overturn the old order, that they stay on top, that they stay in command.
Yes.
So that perhaps what is happening is that they are now trying to create webs of intrigue and in particular put in place controls. You know, there is a huge mandate of very draconian control, which has very much come about since 9/11.
Yes.
And we're now seeing this really begin to become almost so in your face, so obvious, that it's not even hidden anymore.
That's right.
A lot of people think that this control is to make sure, as I say, that if there is a change, that these people, if that's what they are, do not lose control. So therefore, you can look at so many things that have happened in, history, full stop, but in particular recent history, like 9/11, like even things like the space program. And, you know, you can look at obvious things, of course, like the weapons of mass destruction catastrophe. You can look at these in a new light and say, well, maybe there is a pattern unfolding.
Yes.
And maybe the economic crash is not an accident, but maybe that in itself has something that has been engineered to help create this mandate of control. And there's certainly plenty of people that believe that is the case. They don't believe that it was an accident that we're now in this position, but that it's been contrived basically to try to create this machination, this plot, to make sure that a very few people have a lot of centralized power. And hence, as you say, you then come to this vision of a one world government where very few people will have a lot of power. And this is what a lot of people believe is going on. And of course, the euphemism for this, which we hear now spoken openly about, is the New World Order.
Yeah.
Which was a phrase that Gordon Brown was fond of anyway, but now we've just had Barack Obama and Gordon Brown openly declaring a new world order. But amongst conspiracy theorists, and by the way, I have no shame in using that term,
sure,
because by definition, that's what people who consider these things are, they're saying, well, this is what we've been saying for years. Now we see the creation of this centralized new world power, you know, unfolding before our very eyes. So I think a lot of people are now shocked at how quickly what was theory is now beginning to look just like everyday reality now.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember just a few years ago, basically you had to scan in the back of the papers, as it were, to find these articles about corruption, how the agenda is being played, the geopolitical game, as it were. But these days it's like it's all over the place, and you can go to any mainstream news website and basically read, and it's right there in black and white, you know, in front of our faces. It's really, really incredible. And when you also talk about control, I see that this has to do with the legal aspect. Obviously there's more draconian laws coming in and so forth, but what I also seeing is the kind of the technological control in the back of this. They're setting up the surveillance grid, everything that has to do with tracking, tracing you, and so forth. Is that something that you're going to as well in your book?
Yeah, very much. I mean, obviously, the technological world has enabled levels of surveillance that we couldn't have dreamt of a few years ago. Although, obviously, George Orwell's nightmare vision anticipated it in a way that is now coming true. But, yeah, certainly, I mean, the advent of electronic communication and, obviously, the easy availability of cameras does now mean that we are now in a position where I think we can fully expect to be surveyed at every point of the day where we go outside of our houses. And obviously once the new ID card schemes come in, which are not just a piece of plastic in your pocket, but are going to be, you know, biometric and include a lot of details about your DNA, where you go, what you buy, what you do, which sooner or later will be available on a centralized database. Now, there are denials that this is what they're setting up will do, but without that kind of centralized information point, the whole ID system would not function. It wouldn't serve a purpose. So I think they're being disingenuous in the way they discuss ID cards. And of course, the ID card will very soon blossom into what many, many people like David Icke have been saying for years, which is we will then see microchipping, where instead of just carrying a card, you will literally have a little chip put inside your flesh. And obviously, many people feel very uncomfortable at the idea of that kind of thing, because we couldn't be sure what that chip was doing. And it seems, I think, for many, an uncomfortable step too close to becoming sort of part Android. And I think it's the beginning of a rocky road. But these are the issues which are now coming up. So, yeah, absolutely, surveillance as well as the controls are things we're going to hear more about. Although I thought it was very interesting that today, in England anyway, our Home Secretary Jackie Smith has had to back down slightly on the plans for a centralized database of everybody's internet records and who people email and what websites they look at, because there were, you know, many complaints that this really was going too near the Big Brother world.
Yes.
Although even there, although they're now saying they won't do it quite like that, basically what they're now planning instead is to farm it out to private businesses who instead will keep the records of everything that we communicate electronically. So I suspect that we're not going to get away from this too easily. But this, of course, is then a question of why. Why do they need all these kinds of controls? Why do they need this information on us? And of course, in an ID world, whether it be a chip in your arm or a piece of plastic in your pocket, once that governs your entry to shops or offices or public places or public transport, if that stops working, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
If somebody decides that you are perhaps, shall we say, an unwelcome element in society, and you find one day your ID doesn't work, suddenly you will find yourself very much on the fringes of society. You won't be able to buy anything. You won't be able to go anywhere. You will become very much a kind of social leper, really. And I think this is quite a clever way of making sure in that world, if we had a more, shall we say, fascist-like government ever come to power, they would have the means to, shall we say, remove awkward elements in society, not by having to do anything too drastic, but simply by removing people from the ID database. Yes. So this is the world we're now moving into, and I think what's troubling at the moment is when you tell people about this, they look at you like you're talking science fiction. It's not. It's happening now, and we're entering these times now. And what we try to do, the people who are trying to sort of go around, like Ian Crane, myself, David Icke, many, many people, is wake people up to the fact that this is happening now, because there is still a chance that we could fashion a different world.
Yes.
But if we don't stop heading for the direction we're currently heading in, it's going to be very hard to come back. So I think raising awareness now that we still have a chance to create something which is far less draconian, I think is extremely important. And that's why it's very important now to be looking at these kinds of things.
Absolutely. And it seems to be also at the same time as many people are waking up to this reality. On another level, some people also seem to go in the opposite direction of being dumbed down. And that, to me at least, is a kind of signal why the agenda is being openly discussed, if you will, as well. These two seem to run hand in hand, as it were. And it almost seems to be a split, if you will, that those people who really are informed, those who put time into studying the environment that they're in, the political system that they're in, and where we're heading. And at the other end, you have the rest of the gang that seems to be more interested in, you know, entertainment and not talking about these things. Do you think that this is something that needs to be overcome as well in that sense? Or do you feel that this is a lost cause to try to convert these people over to the other side, if you know what I mean?
I don't think anybody's ever a lost cause. I think part of the problem that we have at the moment is that people are easily distracted. And of course, you know, if you just turn on the television and you look at what's pumping out, we are looking at a huge world of distraction, and people are very quickly misled into being fascinated with trivia. And as you say, you know, that term dumbed down. But, and I think here is the hopeful sign, what I find is when you actually offer people something a little bit more than that, if you talk to them about what's going on and you try to expose them to the reality that maybe somebody is actually deliberately trying to suck them away from using their brains, it's actually quite encouraging how quickly people wake up, and you will see them nod and they will begin to agree and say, you know, actually, that's exactly what I think, but I just haven't been able to really do anything about it. And once you have that awareness, once you wake up to the fact that what your television in the corner of the room is selling you is a version of reality that isn't really reality, once you realize that the news stories that are washing into you may be trying to put you in a state of fear rather than actually inform you, once you wake up to that, you can begin to discern more clearly what it is that's being pushed in your direction. And people then are not under its control. It's almost like waking up from hypnosis. But I think that the danger is that people get too used to it and just too used to, you know, watching several hours of television a night, eating junk food, you know, not eating things that are going to give them healthy minds, never mind healthy bodies. I think we now all need to take responsibility for what we put into our minds and what we put into our bodies. And there's plenty of conspiracy theorists out there who believe that there is an ongoing program to actually, if you like, disenfranchise ourselves from our spirits, from our bodies, by feeding us junk, by putting, you know, deadly additives and sweeteners into food that we don't need, that we don't process properly. This is where you realize that we need to wake up and therefore take that responsibility back. But people can, and I definitely don't think in any way are we looking at a lost cause. And in fact, quite the opposite. I think as we get towards 2012, and Helen Sewell touched on this in an astrological broadcast with you a few weeks ago.
Yes.
We're going to see a lot more people actually stand up and say, hang on a minute, we don't like what's going on here. We cannot sit still for this. We will actually see, I think, more reaction rather than less. So the people at the moment that may be seeming a little bit too slow to act, I think once they become aware that maybe somebody's trying to lead them in a bad direction, I think you're going to see more action than maybe we expect. And I think, therefore, we should take some heart to that. I think what the task is at the moment, though, is making sure that the reaction, the response, is not a negative one, it's not a violent one, but is something that can actually be put to good use that is going to create a more positive world. And, you know, I think very much at the moment there is this horrible feeling that we're almost being pushed into rioting, into taking to the streets, because, of course, when people do that, that's when the powers that be can justify more controls in the name of protecting us from violence. And I think people should not respond in any way with that kind of mob mentality. I think that's a big, big mistake. So I think what we need to be trying to sort of create here is a revolution of mind and spirit rather than revolution. Because I think if we go into the more negative way of responding, I think that's when we're almost playing into the hands of some of the powers that would seemingly like us to do that. And I think we need to be very careful.
Well, that's right, and I'm thinking about the most recent thing now. We can see the agenda of fear is being played out again. This card, this is constantly a theme, of course, in the background. But they choose to put this in front of our eyes now and then. This climate of fear. I'm thinking of the recent swine flu scare that's going on right now. I don't know if you follow it at all, but I mean, again, they're pushing this story now again. We had the SARS scares a couple of years ago, but that didn't pan out, but here we, you know, here they go again, and there seems to be, this is about, on one level then, pushing the vaccinations, which again ties back to what you talked about in regards to what we put into our bodies and so forth.
Yes.
And also then, of course, the Tamiflu sales and as an economic engine, if you will, to all of this as well, right?
Well, I mean, yes, I do think it's very interesting that now we have, the swine flu scare going on. And again, what it seems to be doing is creating a climate of extreme fear. And of course, when we are frightened, we give in more to policies which are allegedly there to protect us. But in fact, what they do is take away freedom, take away liberty. And I think we need to absolutely step out of the fear mentality. I mean, if you actually look at the reality of it, now the deaths that have occurred in Mexico as a result, we are told, of this flu, now they're very, very unfortunate. It seems that the strain, if these reports are true, which is going around the rest of the world, is actually nowhere near as strong. And perhaps we need to look at why those deaths in Mexico occurred. Maybe these people did not have access to the same quality of life. Maybe they didn't have clean water. I don't know what the situation is. But it's interesting to note that although nobody as yet seems to be dying in those kinds of numbers, shall we say, in other countries, nonetheless, you know, the fear that is being pumped out is that we could all be dead tomorrow. And yet, yeah, there's actually no evidence of that.
No.
The story is being exaggerated out of proportion to make you think that you've got to rush and, yes, get your dose of Tamiflu. And, of course, that then worries a lot of people, because you look at some of the names behind the companies that are pushing the flu sort of remedies and the flu vaccines. And, of course, a lot of these turn out to be the same kind of people who seem to be behind a lot of the, shall we say, darker political ventures that, of course, the conspiracy world has been discussing for many years. So this is where you think, well, hang on, are we being hoodwinked here? Are we queuing up for vaccinations that we don't need? It obviously creates massive wealth for certain pharmaceutical companies. And this is not to say that they don't also do good, but we need to ask questions about each thing that comes up. Do we need this? What would be the benefit to somebody who didn't have our best interests at heart of us all fearing a huge flu pandemic? So I think before this gets out of hand, people really need to get it back into perspective and consider what some of the other motives might be.
Exactly. And again, as you mentioned, some of these companies, Baxter is one of them, being behind, discussions are being made with WHO, I think, World Health Organization, to develop some kind of vaccine against this. But again, Baxter has been accused before of actually putting live avian flu virus in their vaccines and stuff like this, sent out to 18 different countries. And this is just rolling on and on and on. And it's out there in the open. And in one way, it feels like people who don't take responsibility and read up on these things, that they're in one sense willingly are going along with this. So on one level, they're actually showing you what they're doing all the time, in one sense, but people who don't follow up on this, they just walk into the jaws of these people that are giving them the vaccines and offer them the remedies for the diseases that, in many cases, seems to be that they are behind to begin with, you know.
Well, I mean, one of the areas that I explore in the book, which will be shocking to people new to it, and I'm very aware of this, I mean, the kind of people like ourselves who perhaps discuss this kind of thing fairly often, we get used to it. We don't realize how shocking it is to those on the outside of this who've never heard of the theory that maybe there are people that actually would like to wipe out a fair size of the population.
Yeah.
So, of course, this is very shocking when you come to this idea, but there are many people that believe there is an active program to reduce the global population. Now, overpopulation may be a problem, but obviously somebody else deciding on your behalf who's going to live and who isn't is not really a very good solution. And but it is amazing how many people are willing to believe that there might well be powers at work of people who would, yes, perhaps introduce something more dubious into something which allegedly is there to prevent us getting ill, but actually it might be quite the opposite. I don't know what the truth of these things are, but what I think it does reveal is how little faith we now have in those who are pulling the strings.
Yes.
And to me, it's as much that being revealed as to whether there's any truth to it or not that needs serious action, because there is now so much pessimism that, well, maybe these people that we vote into power and the ones we don't vote into power and yet still seem to have great power over us, well, maybe they don't have our best interests at heart. And that's what the banking crisis has really made people wake up to. And, of course, you know, the loss of faith in authorities is huge. And the danger with that comes where you're almost looking at a kind of a new anarchy, because if you're dealing with people that we cannot respect or trust, there is no way that that kind of power structure can exist for long without there being more extreme methods put into place to keep them in control.
Well, exactly. People are going to.
This is an issue we really do need to look at. But, you know, at the same time, so many of the decisions that seem to be made and the way they are made and the way, certainly in England, people seem to behave when you see them in the House of Commons all screaming at each other and laughing and joking, these are not people you can respect. And because of that, it's certainly younger people are just turning away from it, saying, well, these people are not the answer. But it also then gives, you know, birth to this deep streak of pessimism that, well, maybe these people are so appalling, they would even try to kill us all. And I think it's very, very sad that that's kind of where we've got to, that we're even willing to be talking about this kind of thing, whatever the ultimate truth of it is.
Absolutely. And I want to ask you a little bit more here later on, or perhaps in hour two as we continue, about this this idea of depopulation, what the reason for that might be, and what if so, what they're afraid of, or why the human being needs to be controlled. And on one level, I also see that people will, as just as you said, demand this control in one sense as a kind of response to all the chaos that we see. But before we do that, I want to spend the last 10 minutes or so that we have in this segment, Andy, to talk a little bit more about your speech at the AV2 conference. You will go into this, it's called The Era of Turmoil and the Energy of Hope. And this is, of course, a little bit what we have been talking about already here. But you will you focus a little bit more on Barack Obama and what happened there and what he kind of represents? Is that right?
Of course. Well, I mean, you know, one of the things that I'm very keen to do, and this is very true of the book, is to not leave people feeling paranoid and disenfranchised and frightened, because I think we need the opposite. I think there's a lot of reason to hope and a lot of optimism. In fact, unlikely though it may seem with all the issues we're discussing, but there is a lot of optimism that a lot of these things could be put right. We have an opportunity to do that. And what I think was very, very important with the election of Barack Obama was not the man himself, because as you will doubtless know, and many listeners will know, a lot of people feel that he is a continuation of the old agenda.
Yes.
Certainly a lot of the people in the background who put him into power are the same old faces that were there in the Bush years. And some of the people Obama has appointed to power are some of the same old faces. Now, this obviously is cause for concern. Now, whether or not that reveals anything of the man himself, or whether he is just having to go along with, you know, other programs in the hope that he can change it from within, well, we can't say that yet. I know people like Alex Jones for instance, are convinced that, you know, he is just another New World Order puppet. But I think there are people who hope that's not the case. But even if that is the case, and he is not the savior that people are hoping, what's important is that the energy that put Obama into power was real. Now, that hope for change that we saw, you know, in the faces of the people who were there during the election and, of course, then when he won. Now, we need to look at that. We don't need to look at the man on the podium. We need to look at the looks in these people's faces, because that is where the hope lies, because that was genuine. And that need for something new, even if it's been perhaps slightly naively projected onto this sort of messianic figure falsely, nonetheless, the hope that is in their faces, you can see, is one that this could be different. We could have something different. We could have a different world here. Now, that is something we really need to tap into. And obviously, I mean, if the Obama administration does not deliver, if in the long run it does turn out to be just, you know, carrying on the same agendas we've seen before, I think that people will be a lot less forgiving. And then they will be forced to turn that hope that they had for him into something real themselves. But I think that in itself is very important. I mean, I thought it was interesting that on the very day of Obama's inaugural speech, when, of course, he faltered, and I think the word faithfully got misplaced in the sentence when he was reading his presidential vows. Now, I thought it was interesting that the next day they had to retake those vows in the White House because they didn't want to give rise to, quote, conspiracy theories. So from the very start, actually, they were acknowledging the power of the doubt that there is out there. And in fact, of course, all they did when they retook the oath was create more conspiracy theories, because, of course, they didn't do it on camera. It was all a bit shady the way it was done. But there are now people out there who believe that Obama's not truly the president because he never gave the correct oath. Now, you know, personally, I'm not convinced this isn't just splitting hairs. But what I'm saying here is the fact that they felt they had to do that was a tacit acknowledgement of the power of the people, of not only their hope, but also their doubt. And now, and I think particularly this is true since the whole weapons of mass destruction debacle, and I think it's particularly true because of the huge rise in the 9/11 truth movement, I think there is an acknowledgement that what people think in the collective does count. I think 10 years ago, it was honestly believed by those in power that the masses just didn't matter, they didn't count, they couldn't achieve anything. I'm not sure that's true anymore. And I think, for instance, if you just take 9/11 as a case in point, you know, whatever individuals think about it, the amount of people calling the official account, you know, to account, is huge. And it's a sign that people will no longer just sit back and be told what to believe. And the fact that a recent poll in America said that it was something incredible, something approaching 60% of people are now willing to believe that perhaps at the very least the Bush administration allowed 9/11 to take place. Now, even just looking at it in those simple terms, that is a shocking statistic, because that is how little faith people have anymore in the system. Now, they've renewed their hope with the look in their eyes that they had with the election of Obama. They've renewed that hope, but if that hope is not seen to become something real, we have to try to gather that energy into something that can become real in its own right. And again, I'm not talking here about armed revolution. I don't think that's a solution to anything, but a philosophical revolution, something which involves people standing up and saying, no, enough, we're not going to go like this anymore. It doesn't work. We don't want these levels of deception. This is going to become something real. And, you know, when you look at the astrology of 2012 and you look at all the hopes and fears connected with the ancient prophecies around 2012, so much of it seems to be about the creation of a new consciousness. And I think this is what we're seeing. And we need to hang on to that and not be too pessimistic. And even if we are being misled, even if there are powers out there trying to control us, even trying to wipe us out, the good news is people have noticed. And although you might consider that the mainstream is too blind and most people don't know. As I say, what I find is when you start to talk to people about this, be it just on the bus or in the office or with the people that you know, it's amazing how quickly they will say, you know, yeah, that feels right. I can absolutely believe that. People are not stupid.
No.
There's something welling up in the collective now which could be turned absolutely to humankind's advantage. And I think that offers great hope. But, you know, we stand at a very important point now. We need to create that, shape that into something positive now while we've got the chance. And I think we have a marvelous opportunity literally at our feet now in the next 2 or 3 years. And I think many people feel that strongly.
Absolutely. And I also feel, again, this question of what can be done, what can we do comes up all the time. But I feel that many people are already doing what they need to be doing in that sense. I feel that people need to arm themselves with awareness, with information. And as you said, Andy, a heightened level of consciousness, if you will, meaning that we don't have to sit every single day and read all the news stories about how evil the system is. Because on one level, you can begin to see the pattern after a while and you begin to recognize where the intention of these people are coming from, and you become pretty quickly savvy to the game, as it were. And I feel at least that the most important thing to do is to just take ourselves or yourself to that level of awareness where you can actually be able to see how the game is being played. And again, there's always multiple layers to this. There's depths that you can go into, so to speak, or other perspectives and so forth. But basically, this idea of what can we do, I feel that many people are all already doing it, and hopefully in some way this is what will kind of culminate, if you will, at the end. Where enough people talk about this and enough people become aware, then we have done what we need to do in order to get real people, either in a political system or whatever it might be, that will kind of solve itself, I feel, if people actually are aware of what they're doing, who they're voting for and so forth, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think this is the collective in action, and I think collective consciousness is obviously partly just, you know, practical action, physical action having domino effects. But also, I mean, if you look at the whole new science of consciousness, if you look at the work of people like Dean Radin and the whole Global Consciousness Project, where people have even now developed computers which can seemingly detect ripples in what they're calling the collective consciousness field, it even seems that what we think in itself affects the material world. If we all think in a certain way, it actually does shape the world, not just through practical action, but through some hitherto unknown field of consciousness. And I think that also offers hope that what we think, just changing ourselves, acting differently, of course, but also changing our own thought processes, is in itself transforming the world. And I think this is again a gift which, the more we can become aware of it, the more we can apply it to something practical. So yeah, absolutely, we I think have an opportunity here to identify the problems but not get too bogged down by the problems. And I think one of the old issues of conspiracy theory has been that it's left people feeling very gloomy, very disenfranchised. But you are right that what's happening now is people are starting to put these concerns to some use, coming up with solutions, actually trying to balance all of that. And that's very hopeful. And certainly that's what I'm trying to do and will be trying to do at AV2 in London, is to try to say, yeah, the hope is what matters. That energy of hope is real. The problems are real. But if the two come together, I think there is definitely a solution there for us.
Absolutely. I think this is a good place here to begin to round things up for our one, and then we can continue talking more with Andy in our member section. But again, I want to mention here your new and upcoming book, Andy, is called The Truth Agenda. And where can people go if they're interested in getting a copy of this once it's out?
Okay, well, it'll be published by Vital Signs Publishing, and obviously will be available in all the usual book outlets. But certainly information about the book will be going up hopefully fairly soon on Vital Signs Publishing. .co.uk, and it'll be out in the summer, and hopefully people will know about it.
Brilliant. And mention a few of your other websites as well, where people can go and find out more about crop circles. Are you still involved and contributing to that website as well?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the website swirldnews.com, now that doesn't sadly get updated too much these days, but there's a lot of very valuable crop circle information on there, and people will find lots of interesting articles there. And another website that I'm interested in very much is thechangingtimes.org.uk. And basically that's a website for the meetings we've been holding here in the south of England about all the stuff we've been discussing in this conversation. And if people go on there and click on past events, they will find a lot of downloads, videos, and audio presentations about a lot of these subjects from some very, very good speakers. So there's a wealth of information on the Changing Times website, which people may also want to look at. But also, if people are interested in what's going on with crop circles in the fields here and now, there are many websites, but a good one for instant access is cropcircleconnector.com. So if you look at cropcircleconnector.com, there you will see all the latest formations coming in, being reported as they appear.
Brilliant. And again, all these websites will be linked up on redescreations.com, so you can find them easily. And again, the for more information about tickets, dates, and of course the speakers on the Alternative View, go to avii.co.uk or thealternativeview.co.uk. Those will take you to the same place, as it were. So with that, thank you very much, Andy, for this first hour. Stay with us. We'll take a short break right here, and we'll be right back. Don't miss Hour 2 with Andy Thomas coming up for our members. We're going to talk more about depopulation, the importance of diversity of perspectives, and the need for us to go into fringe areas of research. We're also going to discuss the elite and elaborate on the idea if they really are all-powerful. We're going to talk about the inconsistencies of 9/11, the weapons of mass destruction lies, and also venture into the ET, UFO, and alien agenda question as well. More information about how to sign up and tune in to our continuation for our members is available on redicecreations.com. Thank you for staying with us. We'll talk more after this break.
And so he repeats these words all over and over again. To be